Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Again, here at Radio.com in Boston, I'm Mike Mullaney, and, you know, every year, it's funny, I wish I did not have to host my next guest each year, because that would mean that everything in the world was good, and everybody was doing good business, and no one was getting scammed. But unfortunately, that is not the case. So joining me on the phone right now is Paula Fleming, the Chief Market and Exec and Sales Officer at the Better Business Bureau serving Eastern Mass, Maine, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Paula, welcome back to Radio.com.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
It's great to talk every year because, well, look, you're a great guest because you know your stuff and the reality that there's a lot of people out there looking to take advantage of people, and it's pretty sad. I mean, when we did the show about the COVID scams and the stimulus check scams, that made me sick that there were out there people preying on people, but that's the reality what you do. You try to sort through everything going on and kind of warn people when there's something like that going on. So give us a little bit of background on the Better Business Bureau, and they're more than just recommending businesses. Tell us a little bit, the 101.
Sure. I'd be happy to, Mike. As you mentioned, I do come on quite often, and very thankful for the media that helps get the word out. Whether it's a scam or a charity that you need to check out, whether it's a business that you want to research prior to making a purchase of a service or a product, it's a customer review you want to write, positive, negative, or neutral, on a small business in your community. We're here to help support the community by providing factual information on businesses. And as you mentioned, we're in charge of four states.
That's a lot of work to do. It's like me doing all these radio stations.
Yeah. It is a lot of work to do. I'm very thankful during this time that I have the ability to provide factual information with everything going on between the pandemic, the holidays, the charitable giving. There's a lot going on. And it's really difficult to kind of see your way through it. So we are here to help. We're 24/7, BBB.org.
And I guess, you know, the overriding thing to remember as we go into this, because we're going to talk, you know, I got the email about one particular scam, but when it really comes down to it, remember, number one, the IRS will never call you. Number one. Number two, chances are your children are not being held hostage in exchange for a cash drop-off number over the phone. I mean,
if someone would like to take one of my children right now, I tell you.
I'm sure we've all been in that position. I've got three teenagers, so yeah, yikes.
Yeah, one more than me.
Well, you know, it's all work. But, you know, the reality is a lot of people are out there to take advantage. And because of the COVID-19, many more people are doing stuff online, shopping online. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problems come. I mean, you know, we talked about this before, but it bears mentioning. Just because you get an email saying, you know, hey, click here to check out, you know, Walmart's new deals, and you go to the website and it's deals.walmartdeals.com. You believe it, but that's not the place. People set up phony websites all the time.
Sure. There are tons of lookalike websites that mirror legitimate websites and businesses. It's extremely unfortunate, but it is something that transpires year after year. And that is why we're here encouraging people to check out a business, go directly to a business. Don't just click on a link or a text message link that appears, or even when you're scrolling social media late at night and you find a great ad, pop-up ad. If you find it interesting and something you'd like to purchase, go off of social media, go directly to the website, do a little research prior to making the purchase and providing your financial information online. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, Mike, and I just 5 minutes ago had a call from a woman in Vermont who said, I'm inquiring about a business. I found them online. We're in Vermont. They want us to wire money for a product to get it here by Christmas. Now, that to me is a huge red flag. She did not research the business at BBB.org, which I encouraged her to do. But wiring money is a huge red flag when a business asks you to do that. So I encourage people this holiday season, and frankly, all year round. When you're making a purchase, to use one credit card for online purchases, this will help you monitor transactions and also give you an additional layer of protection because you can use the credit card company if you're unhappy with a product or a service, but also if you never received said product or service.
And that's one of those things that I think always bears mentioning. You know, so many young people don't necessarily get credit cards right away, but they get debit cards and they act like they're just the same as a credit card. But the reality is like every time you use a debit card, in many ways, you're allowing every merchant you do business with to access all your funds. And you don't have the luxury or the benefit of a credit card company to kind of say, hey, hold on, what's going on here? Talk about that.
We found that it's much more difficult to get your funds back when you're dealing with a bank, which i.e. a debit card, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and that's just something, there are a lot of those little subtle things you should be doing. So let's just talk about the specific scam that we got the press release on that kind of precipitated this phone call. You know, this is, you know, as we go into the holiday season and, you know, this year because of the outbreak of the pandemic, people want Christmas to get here quicker. You know, we're playing Christmas music on one of our radio stations here a little earlier than normal, but people want to get back to it. People want to get back to feel good vibes because there's so much bad news out there. Reality is that people want to get gaming systems. It's probably become one of the biggest items out there. And, you know, if people want to understand how big gaming is, I can talk about this because this is mind-blowing to me. The biggest selling album in the history of music for 1 week in sales was Adele's 25. When that came out in 1 week, it sold over 3 million copies. In
wow.
1 week, which is amazing. And you think to yourself, wow, that is incredible stuff. Well, I just found out that when the most recent Madden game came out, they sold 14 million copies in 1 day.
Wow.
So,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about the scale when you're dealing with electronic gaming systems. So we know that they're popular. I have several at my house, and my wife hates it, and I love playing. But the reality is that this year there are some new game systems, whether it be the PlayStation 4 Pro, new PlayStation 5. There's a whole bunch of new gaming systems, and there are suddenly a bunch of scams going on. Talk about what this scam is.
You're exactly right. Video game consoles are one of the most popular gifts every holiday season. But shoppers looking online for cheaper prices, great deals, need to be wary. And this is how the scam plays out. The online shopper finds the console they have searched tirelessly for. And for those that have a very picky teenager like myself, they typically have a very clear and concise idea of what they hope for during the holiday season. So they find it at a cheap price online, cheaper than anywhere else. They look over the website and find some positive reviews that lead them to believe the website is legitimate. Using PayPal or another type of online payment, they purchased said PC or console. Shortly after that, the email confirmation with shipping information and a tracking number is sent. So you think you're good to go for the holidays. So far, so good, right? Not so quickly. Now it's just time to wait for the console to arrive. You continue to sit there and wait. Well, the buyer does receive a package. When they open it up, the console they thought they'd get is actually a smaller actual product. Could be a valueless phone cover or something, you know, that's totally not what was purchased. Buyers won't be able to contest the purchase with a third party who processed the payment. Since they technically received a package, it's extremely difficult. Trying to get in contact with the company will most likely be impossible. Emails and phone numbers listed on the website are probably invalid. And unfortunately, this leaves the parent or the purchaser of the product out of luck. So we're encouraging people that if you want to make a purchase of a product, such as a PC, a gaming system, research the company you plan to purchase from thoroughly. As we mentioned, BBB.org obviously is a great place to start. Avoid your impulse buying. Scammers like to draw people in with flashy sales, limited time offers, and hopes you will hand over your money on an impulse. Resist the urge and do your due diligence. In 15 minutes, you can figure out if a business is reliable and credible and ethical. And if you're ever questioning if it is so, go with your gut and move along. Don't believe prices that are too good to be true. Before you start shopping, find out the price of the gaming console at a major retailer. You could go to Best Buy. You could go to Walmart. Find out what the price is. Find out what the Black Friday deals, which have already started, are offering, and do some comparison shopping. But the key here is these scam artists, like always, are very, very savvy. You want to make sure that if you're making a purchase, you know the details. So what's the return policy? Is the business actually secure when you're giving your information online? So there's a lot of things, really simple things to do. If you have any questions or concerns, again, you can go to bbb.org and we'll help guide you through the process to finding out if it's a legitimate, reliable company.
And you make that great point, the fact that, you know, if you go online and you say, okay, I want to get the new PlayStation 5, when it comes down to it, I'm going to look up the number or the cost here, and, you know, Walmart has it this price, the Microsoft Store has it this price. Oh, what do you know? Joe's gaming system of Sheboygan has it way, way less. There's a reason that it's way, way less. It's because they're not actually selling it. They are scamming. And that's the thing. You know, so many times you can figure these things out, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then there are some of those other subtle things where, you know, you'll get an email saying Walmart has, you know, and I don't want to pick on Walmart. Let's say Best Buy has your thing, and you'll go in and it'll be a phony site. And really what it comes down to is don't follow links you get in the email, because that's one of the classic scams, is that you get something in the email and it looks like it's the right address. But as you pointed out to me once, and I do it all the time now, if you hold your cursor over the person who sent it, it'll actually give you the email address. So even though it might say, you know, Lowe's or whatever, you'll hover over it with your cursor and you'll notice that it's a whacked out email that has nothing to do with that retailer.
Right, right. And that's a simple step. Just simply hover over. And a lot of people don't take that, or they're not aware that's even, you know, the thing to do. So, yes, you're exactly right, per usual. there's some simple steps that you can take. And, you know, we're talking here that these scam artists, you mentioned some larger companies that are great companies to shop at.
Yeah.
But these scam artists use well-known companies, well-known brands, and mirror those sites. So that's what we're talking about here. It's those scammers that are mirroring sites that are well-known brands, well-known businesses. And then take it a step further when you're shopping, you know, either through social media or you want to support small businesses, which we urge and encourage within your community. Still, do your research. Make sure that you are clear on their return policies. Make sure that you are clear that it's a secure website. And make sure that you know what you're getting when you're making the purchase. So is it exactly the product you want, or is it a knockoff of the actual product that your child has on the wish list, for example, or your spouse? So there's a lot of simple steps. Again, everything can be found at bbb.org. Number one thing this holiday season, I would say, check out the business prior to making a purchase of a product or service.
And then the other things we talked about in the past, and they always bear mentioning, you first off, you know, try to put it on one credit card, use that credit card throughout the holiday season so you can track everything you purchase and you actually know where everything is. Because so many people have multiple credit cards, it's good to have everything in one spot. And that way, if there's any issue, you can find out. The other things we've talked about is when you're out there making purchases, try not to do it at, you know, your local, you know, coffee shop that has free internet, because that is unsecured.
Right.
And the unsecured Wi-Fi is something that over the years we've talked about, but people take it for granted. And let's talk for a little bit about why that is such an important thing to avoid.
Well, you're right. People think, you know, especially right now, right? People are going to their local coffee shop just to get peace of mind right now. And having free Wi-Fi is actually looked at as something that is great at your local coffee shop. You can get some work done. You can, you know, do some homework. You can, if you're a child, you can make purchases for the holiday season. But you have to be careful when you're using Wi-Fi open. You have to be secure for public Wi-Fi. So, yeah, we're always encouraging people to be careful when they are using an open Wi-Fi, because it can leave you vulnerable and your information out there to get, especially if your laptop, your Chromebook, your phone is not up to date with malware and protection.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, that's one of those things where I know a lot of people don't like to update their iPhones, but the reason iPhone does so many updates is the fact that they're trying to put security on it. And that happens exactly. For most things. It's really important to get those repairs and the updates, because it really does protect you. A couple other things that we really want to talk about, because this is a year where so many folks are being very philanthropic, because there's never been more need. I mean, every charity I've talked to talks about the amount of hit that they've taken because they can't do their fundraising the right way, how so many more people are in need. I mean, Carson Kennedy's 10,000 Toys for Girls and Boys has gone online, and we're looking for donations this year. And the amount of need, because less and less people are able to collect toys, is overwhelming. So one of the things that people need to do is really look into the charities they want to donate to. You know, one of the things that we're lucky about here in Massachusetts is there are so many great charities that are based right here that we know and that are, you know, identified on your website as being the most dependable of the charity organizations. Talk a little bit about why it's so important to check that out.
Oh, for sure. It's extremely important. We have a website dedicated. It's called the Wise Giving Alliance. It's give.org. Again, it's give.org. Here you can search for charities that you would like to give to, and we'll give you all the information about the charity, how much of the dollar is going to the services that you're hoping to. So if it's the veterans, if it's, you know, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, you get all the information to see if they are a charitable organization that you'd like to give to. Basic giving tips this holiday season: get the charity's exact name. There's so many charities in existence. Mistaken identity is a common problem. Thousands of charities have cancer in their name, for example, but no connection with one another. So do some research.
Let me throw you this one. One of the ones that I'm constantly getting is a police charity one.
Yes.
Where they, what is this one all about? Because that one is, I get it two or three times a month. And they always say, is Rosa there?
Ones, but we encourage you that you should go to your state so that they're check with state charity officials. And many states, charities are required to register. There are a lot of local fire, police that do accept donations, but we encourage you not to give to someone that's pressuring you, that has called you, but rather if you'd like to support your local community first responders, go directly to them.
And that's the thing. You can look up these folks. And, you know, again, I always talk about this specific one where my kid's school was collecting for a charity. Mm-hmm. And when we investigated the charity, they were only using 10% to go towards patient. The rest was for fundraising and charity. And I said, you know, we're not giving anything. Dana Farber is right in Boston. Why wouldn't you give to them? So it's like you have to research these organizations, because, again, it blows your mind that people would set up scam charities, but there are plenty of them.
But they do, and they unfortunately prey on people's big hearts during the holiday season.
All right, so that's your update. We will talk to her more as the holiday season ensues. But, again, if you'd like to get information, just go to bbb.org, punch in your zip code, and that'll give you all the information you need here in Massachusetts for purchases, companies you can rely on, and the like. So, again, thanks to Paula Fleming from the Better Business Bureau. Again, bbb.org. I'm Mike Mullaney, and this is New England Lifestyles on radio.com in Boston. Once again, here on New England Lifestyles at radio.com in Boston, so many topics to discuss with the impact of this global pandemic, which we know is now kicking back in. And we can see the light at the end of the tunnel with vaccines coming, but they're not here yet. And that is just caused so much problems for folks. So many people out of work, so many people struggling to take their little piece of the American dream. Part of that American dream is getting a house, having a mortgage, being able to pay your mortgage, etc. Joining us on the phone right now is Danielle McCoy, Vice President and Fair Lending Officer for Fannie Mae. Danielle, welcome to radio.com in Boston.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
It's a challenging time for a lot of folks. Tell me how COVID-19 has impacted so many homeowners, especially here locally around Boston.
I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head. You know, millions of people have been impacted financially, whether it's as a result of furloughs or job losses, business closures, and a lot of people have been left unable to pay their mortgages. The good news is that there are options for people that have concerns about paying their mortgage or their rent. And we have a website called knowyouroptions.com where homeowners and renters can find easy to understand information on those options.
I know that over the years, you know, Fannie Mae is one of the biggest lenders in the country. And there was, you know, there was a momentary moment of scandal, but we moved through that. And you guys continue to be providing a lot of mortgages for a lot of folks. The idea of how challenging it is for folks, say I'm a person who's looking to get mortgages. You know, right before the pandemic, when it was a pretty good time for getting loans, has it become more challenging for folks? And what should we know if people are looking to maybe go in and refinance and stuff like that? What are some of the challenges to folks who just want to either get a mortgage or get a more favorable rate at this stage of the game? What has changed due to COVID-19 in terms of lending?
So I think the important thing to note is that if you think that you either want to get a loan or you want to refinance, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac continue to put liquidity in the market. So there is an ability to get mortgage loans. People should contact lenders and see what's eligible. And, you know, the website I mentioned, knowyouroptions.com, has information if you're struggling, but also has information if you want to know if you should refinance, or you want to know more about becoming a homeowner. It's important, regardless of what situation you're in, that you educate yourself. And that's a great place to start, that website.
I mean, overall in this climate, where are interest rates for the most part for those who are looking? You know, it's funny because I remember when my mom bought our family house back in 1976, she was paying 12% interest on the mortgage loan. And obviously that has changed a lot. What are rates currently? Because obviously this could change in a heartbeat. But generally, where are lending rates now?
Rates are different depending on your situation, so I'm not going to quote one rate, but I will say they're at historic lows.
Yeah,
but
that's good
stuff. They are at historic lows. And that's important to note, and I think that that could come into your decision-making. But I would just want to quickly, though, get back to something that you asked earlier, and that was how COVID-19 is really impacting the Boston area. And, you know, a lot of people that were facing financial difficulty due to COVID-19, one of the things that they tried to do was get a forbearance. And we see that those people that were most impacted, so these are people that, you know, had no trouble paying their mortgage before the crisis, but after COVID-19, they missed two mortgage payments. 96% of those people took advantage of a forbearance plan nationally.
Yeah, can you talk about what a forbearance is? Because I, as a person who's had a mortgage since 2004, it's the first time I heard it. Yeah, obviously you hear four based on anything, and you immediately think foreclosure. What's forbearance?
It's a little different. So forbearance is a temporary pause of your mortgage payment or a reduction in your mortgage amount. And so under the CARES Act, people are able to get a forbearance for up to 180 days, and then that can be extended for up to 360 days, so almost a year. All you need to do is contact your mortgage servicer. That's who you make your mortgage payments to, and let them know that you're facing some type of hardship due to COVID-19.
And how do you qualify for that?
Again, all you have to do is have a COVID-19 hardship.
Good.
So if you have a COVID-19 hardship and your loan is owned by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, or you have a federally backed mortgage, which really is the majority of mortgages in this country, if you fit in one of those categories, all you have to do is call them and say you have an impact, and your mortgage servicer can help you.
And it's just an amazing time because so many people who never even projected, like my wife is a dental hygienist who had her pick of any job anywhere. And now because of COVID-19, less and less people want to go to the dentist because they're afraid. So now she is not working nearly as often as she used to, and it really does have an impact. So many people who had no idea that they could ever be impacted by anything have really been impacted by this. Are there any options for homeowners already in forbearance plans, but they're still worried about being able to pay it again? Because this, look, the reality is it's there.
Correct. So if you're in a forbearance plan now and you find that it's ending, there's a few things. First, you can extend it. So if your situation hasn't changed, you haven't gone back to work and you still can't pay your mortgage, ask your mortgage servicer for an extension. But if your situation has changed and you want to start paying again, it's important know that you don't have to repay all of your monthly missed payments at once. It's not necessary. Instead, there's a number of solutions, including repayment plans, deferring missed payments to when the loan is paid off, or a more permanent modification that might reduce your monthly payment for the life of the loan.
You know, one of the crazy things is that, you know, if you're a homeowner who has renters, that can really impact you because, you know, say you buy a three-family house and you've got three renters and everything seems good, your mortgage is covered, and all of a sudden these folks aren't working. It can have a real negative impact on you as a homeowner because you have a high level there. I mean, there are so many factors that really impact folks who are either homeowners or people who are owners of, you know, rental properties. I mean, there's a lot of options that are causing a lot of people stress.
Correct. And if you're an owner of rental property, and again, your loan is owned by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, or it's federally backed, forbearance could be an option for you. And this helps you in that situation because then you could give your tenants a chance to breathe and not be concerned if they've lost their job if you're taking forbearance. So, you know, there are options even for people in that situation.
It's interesting now that we're sitting here between administrations and there's a lot of people hoping that CARE Act gets impacted. I mean, the change of, you know, obviously I don't want to talk politics specifically with you, but the way the government approaches things and whether or not certain acts are extended, will that have impact on how you are able to do your jobs
to help folks? Yeah, for Fannie Mae, our top priority is to make sure that people are able to stay in their homes to the extent that they can during this pandemic. And what we found during the last crisis is one of the most important things is that people are aware of the options that are available to them. And so we're going to stay focused on helping homeowners and renters stay in their home by making sure that they know all of those options.
Well, again, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of folks are struggling. But then again, you know, if you are in a situation where you've been saving and you happen to be lucky enough to have a job, I mean, I got to be honest, I'm doing a lot more at my job, but I'm very thrilled that I have this job. And, you know, a lot of folks are there. So, I mean, the idea of, you know, worrying about whether or not you can get a loan, as you mentioned, if you've done the right things over the years and gotten good credit, and even if you don't have the perfect credit, there are ways to work around those things if you have steady employment and you've done some savings. And I know that you at Fannie Mae and places like Freddie Mac and other lending institutes are open for business and want to help people capture that dream of home ownership, don't you?
Correct. And that's why I think I suggest that all your listeners go to knowyouroptions.com because there's information for people at all ends of the spectrum in the home owning process, whether you're interested in owning a home, whether you're interested in getting more information or refinancing, and very important now, whether you're struggling paying your mortgage or struggling paying your rent, there's information there for you on that website.
And again, the website is knowyouroptions.com. The site has informative videos, fact sheets, mortgage loan and renter lookup tools. There's links to the CARE Act, you know, all information there. And you can even localize it, you know, depending on where you're at, because there are so many different situations depending on where you're at in the world. Well, again, Danielle McCoy,
correct,
Vice President and Fair Lending Officer for Fannie Mae. Appreciate your time. A lot of folks struggling. Glad you guys have a lot of information out there to help out.
All right. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you? So that is the voice of Paul Gianfrido, the president and CEO of Mental Health America, joining us here on New England Lifestyles here at radio.com in Boston. Sir, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. We know that, you know, look, everybody is under stress during this pandemic. No one's ever dealt with anything like this. But in particular, the healthcare workers who are, you know, for years you always thought to yourself, frontline battlers are soldiers. But no, in this fighting a global pandemic, it is doctors, it is nurses, it is physician's assistants, it's people checking you in at the hospitals. And these folks are under a great deal of stress. So first off, tell us a little bit about your organization, what you're all about, and what these findings were.
Yeah, so at Mental Health America, obviously, we work for mental health for all. And so our concern is to make certain that we're always paying attention to the whole person and not just one aspect of their health, that being the physical health side. So in doing this particular survey, what we were looking to try to understand more about was the emotional health, mental health impacts of the pandemic on all the people who are taking care of us and tending to our physical health care needs. A lot of people we're interested in the physical side. Are they going to get sick? You know, are they going to be more exposed to the virus than others? But we felt too little attention was being paid to the emotional health side for our frontline workers.
You know, it's amazing to me that people, when you really think about things, you know, it's like you try to keep yourself safe wearing a mask, washing your hands. But with healthcare workers, they basically go into what you call a hot zone and spend 10 hours in that hot zone up close with people who've got a virus which is killing, you know, it's killed almost 300,000 Americans. And, you know, there is a mental strain that comes along with that. You know, great example, my wife is a dental hygienist. And, you know, it's not only not wanting to get sick and some of the mental stress, but, you know, we sit there and we put on gloves or we put on a mask. These healthcare workers, she's got two M95 masks on, a face shield, two sets of protective clothing, multiple gloves on. It takes a physical toll on you, too. At the end of the day, these folks are exhausted mentally, exhausted physically because of how much. I mean, this is a big amount of stress on these folks.
It's huge. It's huge. And they're all reporting it. And as you say, you know, 68% in the survey, you know, expressed, you know, physical exhaustion as one of the things that they were feeling, but 82% said emotional exhaustion. So they're exhausted physically, they're exhausted emotionally, and all they're working to do is to take care of us, right? And so how are we taking care of them? And it doesn't look like we're doing a very good job of taking care of them, at least on the emotional side during this pandemic right now.
It's interesting. I did a conversation with a woman who works with the nurses union, and the nurses union report a huge amount of stress, not only from, you know, the working conditions, but also being like in the healthcare system. There are folks who are even more frontline than others. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes the people who are day to day taking care of folks, it's an even higher level of stress. And, you know, you know, when you go in and you don't necessarily have the correct equipment, because most people do, we've gotten to a point where there's a lot of equipment, but a lot of people are being told to just wash masks and stuff like that. There are so many aspects of this that create stress, least of which is not, you know, wanting to avoid bringing that illness home, because everyone's got families and they want to avoid that as well.
Yeah, they not only don't want to bring the illness home, but they're also saying that when I get home, even if I'm not worried about the illness or if my family members aren't worried about me bringing the illness home, I'm worried that I'm not taking care of them enough, you know, that I'm not getting my chores done around the household, that I'm not cooking the meals that I was expecting myself to cook for them, that I'm not providing the emotional support to kids who may be, you know, learning remotely and, you know, struggling right now with that, that they're piling a whole bunch of other things on top of themselves because by their very nature, they take care of people. Yeah. And so they're feeling it on the physical side. They're feeling it on the emotional side, that they're falling short of being able to keep their loved ones protected and safe.
And again, if you're just tuning into New England Lifestyles, I'm Mike Mullaney, and we're on the line with Paul Gianfrida, the president and CEO of Mental Health America, about a survey talking about the mental health effects of COVID-19 on healthcare workers. You know, it's one of the craziest things is that, you know, if somebody gets a broken arm, they go to the hospital and get it set. If somebody's got a twisted ankle, there are complete easy steps to follow to make sure that you heal from that. But there are very few illnesses or situations which have a stigma attached, and we're trying to overcome the stigma of mental illness. We've seen this. You know, so many people have spoken out, whether it be pro athletes, whether it be, you know, high-ranking officials. People deal with stress, and getting, you know, approaching this is like not something to be ashamed of, but something that we all deal with and looking for help. I mean, there are methods by which you can help relieve some of this mental health. And that's an important message to get out there, isn't it, sir?
Yeah. Seeking help is actually a strength, not a weakness. So knowing where your limits are and having that kind of self-awareness and frankly, that kind of self-security to be able to say, I've reached a point where I need help to continue to do what I'm doing is a real sign of strength. And to be able to get the right kind of information to people and the right kind of resources to people when they have reached that point where they are saying from strength, I need help, that's critical and that's essential to the work that, you know, Mental Health America and all of our affiliates around the country, you know, including in Boston with the Mental Health Association of Massachusetts, this is the work that we're all trying to do.
You know, it's funny. When someone wants to get in physical shape, people can say, well, you know something, you've gained some weight. Why don't you try some exercise? Or why don't you try altering your diet? It's going to help you out. There are simple steps to take from that perspective. Are there steps you can take, simple steps you can take to kind of keep your mental health at its peak efficiency? Are there things we can do to kind of make sure that we're managing stress the right way mentally?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly can do things like, you know, finding comfort and joy in the things that we do, and setting aside time to rest and recuperate and relax. But I also say that, you know, when things are really getting to people, don't guess about what may be happening. Just like you're not going to guess about whether or not, you know, your leg's broken, you know, you're going to go get it x-rayed to double check. Take a mental health screen. They're free. They're freely available on our website at mhascreening.org, and you get immediate results. So people can take care of themselves and do it in a way that doesn't invite anybody else to make a judgment about who they are or what they're going through at the moment.
But being open and honest about these things and having conversations, I mean, one of the biggest, I've heard over the years that, you know, stress is something, it's like, you know, it's almost like a poison. It builds up in your body. There are ways to alleviate that stress, talking to folks, you know, maybe just being aware of those things. I mean, what can we do mentally just to be aware of our situation?
Yeah, I mean, and certainly, you know, practicing being self-aware is important, but I also think that just taking breaks, you know, whether they're breaks, you know, during the course of a work day in our mind, or whether they're actual physical breaks, go take a walk or go for a run or something like that. If we break up activities, we can break up the stress in our lives and just do something else. And so that's a really important thing that we can do, because it can give us a measure about how stressed we're feeling, about how quickly we can alleviate the stress by doing some other activity.
You know, and one of the things that you had mentioned, which I think bears mentioning, is the idea of burnout. You know, so many of these healthcare workers, and this is really based about healthcare workers, and when we talk about healthcare workers, again, we're not just talking about doctors and nurses. There are a whole litany of folks, reception people, janitors in these hospitals. There are so many folks who are doing the things to keep folks safe, but also are in that stressful situation, and burnout being one of them. You know, I read a story yesterday about a doctor who has worked 262 straight days to try to relieve the stress of COVID. And that there are dangers in burnout, aren't there? I mean, that can physically break a person down.
Yeah, it can physically break a person down. And for the rest of us, if we want to just think selfishly about it, it can also lead to the statistic that we've seen in the survey, which is that, you know, fully half of the people working in this industry are wondering whether or not they should be working in a different career at this point.
That's so amazing.
It can burn people down physically and mentally.
Well, again, Paul Gianfrido, President and CEO of Mental Health America, do you have a website recommendation of where people can go to get information about, you know, keeping their mental health at a level that's best to keep their health safe?
Yeah, they should come to mhanational.org. You know, the /frontline will get you to a lot of healthcare worker resources in particular, but we've got a lot of free resources, screening, and other things on our website that people can take advantage of.
And again, you know, you said it, you know, keeping this stuff bottled up inside is not helpful. Asking for help is one of the strongest things people can do. And there is a lot of help out there, whether it be counseling, whether it be, you know, just tips on how to keep yourself healthy. And it's important that we approach our mental health the same way we do our physical health. It's every bit as important.
Absolutely.
All right, sir. I appreciate your time. Again, if you want to get information, give the website one more time.
MHANational.org.
Thanks again for the time. Thanks for joining us this morning on New England Lifestyles here at Radio.com in Boston. And again, here at Radio.com here in Boston, you know, one of the things as we talk about the impact of this coronavirus is the impact on the things that go outside of the traditional. Obviously, the loss of jobs is tough. The loss of lives is tough. But there are other things that are really starting to raise their hand. And we're going to talk about those today. We're talking about the abuse of alcohol, drugs, even suicide. And joining us on the line right now is John Auerbach, President and CEO of the Trust for America's Health. Thank you for joining us this morning, sir.
My pleasure.
The impact of this, where, you know, so much of what we focus on recently is the number of deaths from specifically the virus, which, of course, is terrifying. And you see it's going to go up over 100,000, could go as high as 150,000 this year, which is terrifying. But the other part of this is what happens beyond that, because America's mental health is not necessarily where it ought to be right now. None of us have had to deal with this stuff. We've seen firsthand people who have had a hard time dealing with this. And this often leads to drug, alcohol, and even suicide. Talk a little bit about where we're at, and maybe if you have any stats about Massachusetts as well, just as kind of a big picture of how this is impacting folks.
Well, I think we can get some sense of the possible impact in the future by looking at where we have been in the last 10 years, because over the last 10 years, we've seen a dramatic increase in the deaths in America from drugs, alcohol, and suicide. And in just the year for which we have the most recent data, that's 2018, there were 152,000 deaths from either drugs, alcohol, or suicide, a record number. And when we explored some of the reasons for those deaths, we found that they were related to economic, social, environmental pressures in people's lives very often. And so it is likely that we'll see an increase in terms of those numbers as we see the kind of toll that has been taken as a result of COVID-19.
And, you know, it's interesting to see because obviously people can point to drug and alcohol use and say, well, that's something they brought on themselves. Well, it's not as simple as that. And I can say that as a person who's got 24 years of recovery behind me. It is not as easy as it seems. It's nothing that you ask for, and it's something you have to deal with in a way that goes beyond what most people understand. But, you know, it's interesting how when an illness which is viral like COVID-19 comes around, people really go into lockdown and say, we have to protect folks. But so many deaths happen every year, whether it be through drug and alcohol abuse or even more so through suicide. I mean, when someone told me that, you know, on average, 18,000 people are murdered each year, but 36,000 commit suicide. It blew my mind. I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, double the people take their lives than are killed in random ways. So these are national health crises which really need to be addressed, especially, you know, the underlying opioid crisis, which is something which is continuing to be a real challenge.
That's absolutely right. And what we have seen as we've looked at the data over the last decade is that the rates have increased across all populations. We've seen a disproportionate impact on some of these deaths in certain communities, like the rates were higher in white communities than communities of color, although now we're seeing a dramatic increase in communities of color. We're seeing that the rates are also tied to poverty. The more likely you are to be poor, the more likely that you will die from one of these deaths. And that very much links to the ways that the conditions in your life affect your overall health. That's true for obesity and diabetes and heart disease,
right?
But it's also true for these. If we can change those conditions, focus on what is causing the problems, we will be able to reduce these numbers.
And I would assume that, you know, because of these, you know, changes in the ways people live have such a big impact on mental health and the use of drugs and alcohol. You know, if suddenly 35 million Americans have lost their job, that's pretty depressing. People are going to turn someplace for comfort or for solutions, and it's not always the right way to go. Same thing happens when, you know, you have a disruption in your life and the isolation. One of the things people feel in a lockdown situation, that isolation, people who are dealing with the loneliness, you know, if you're someone who has struggled with some mental health challenges and feeling alone, suddenly you're locked down for 7 or 8 weeks, that's going to take a huge emotional toll. And I would imagine this year is going to be a terrible year for numbers for both drug and alcohol abuse, but also for the mental health and the rate of suicide.
Well, and we're already beginning to see some signs of that. The National Institute of Mental Health released information about the number of calls that came into the federal emergency hotline for people in emotional distress. And what it found in April of this year compared to April of last year was a 1,000% increase in the number of calls into that line. The Kaiser Family Foundation also did a survey of Americans and across all demographic groups and asked how much their lives had been significantly disrupted by the coronavirus outbreak. And almost 50% of the people called said that it had significantly affected their normal life. An additional 20% said it did to a certain extent. So you've got almost three quarters of the country saying this has been a pretty traumatic experience. And that is a warning sign and an indication that we need to ramp up the programs, put in place the policies that we know will work and will help to save lives.
And again, if you're just tuning in to radio.com, I'm Mike Mullaney, and we're on the line with John Auerbach, President and CEO of the Trust for America's Health. The idea that this is a problem, what can we do individually to help out? I mean, you know, we've heard about warning signs for those we're worried about, but sometimes you can't see the warning signs when you're in a quarantine. I know that the restrictions are now easing up, but what can we be watching for with friends, family, and those we care about to really see if there's a problem that we might be able to help them with?
Well, I do think we should be checking in with our family members and friends. It's not as effective to do that by phone or Zoom, but it's better than nothing. It's very important to check in and to look for signs or indications that that the conditions are taking a toll on people. And when we see that happening, it's important to try to reach out to be helpful and to remember that there are services. There are services like the hotlines I was mentioning. People should also be encouraged to talk to their clinicians or talk to the leaders in the faith community. It's important to make a connection. But yeah. I would also say individually, it's good for people to think about talking to their elected officials about the policies that need to be put in place, because there's definitely a role for friends and family members, but we've got to make sure that government is also recognizing how important this is and taking the appropriate steps.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, so many situations like cancer, no one's finding a cure for cancer, but sometimes people who deal with mental health issues or addictive problems are looked down at them. You know what I mean? Like there's some weakness involved there, when in reality, these people are dealing with actual medical conditions, and we need to keep working at taking that stigma away, too, to really help, even across the board, getting the national funding and having people take it more seriously than just as being a lifestyle choice or some form of weakness. It drives me crazy.
You're so right about that. Stigma is a major issue. We need to treat these as what they are. They're health conditions, and we should not be afraid to talk about them, not be afraid to talk among family members about what can be done to be helpful. This is a medical condition and should be thought of in the same way we think about other medical conditions, whether it's high blood pressure or diabetes. We need to really struggle against the stigma.
Well, again, you're the CEO of the Trust for America's Health, your organization. What do you guys are actually doing day to day so we actually know what you guys are all about?
Well, we put out reports like the one that we released today because we think it's important for our policymakers and the public to just know the facts. We also are very active in Washington, D.C., in working with the legislative and executive branches, where we share with them the data. But we also say there is reason for optimism because we know certain programs work. And if we've got evidence that they work, let's use those. Let's make sure that people across the country have access to interventions that can be effective. So we've worked very diligently with both the Trump administration and with Congress to say, as you're passing these COVID-19 response acts that are with trillions of dollars being spent, let's make sure that we include within those programs and policies that address the issues related to alcohol, drugs, and suicide.
Well, again, that information is out this week. Again, the CEO of the Trust for America's Health, John Auerbach. Sir, I appreciate your time, and obviously I hope we do take this seriously. And again, the key is reaching out to folks, keep your eye on folks, and if you're feeling that you need some help, there is help out there. We actively encourage everybody to get out there and get the help they need. It isn't a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength.
Absolutely. And if your listeners want to find out more information about what they can do, please go to our website, www.tfah.org. That's TFAH. And you'll find the report as well as the recommendations around policies that can work.
I appreciate your time, sir. John Auerbach, President and CEO of the Trust for America's Health. Important information out there. Pay attention. Sir, thank you for joining us this morning at radio.com here in Boston.
Thank you.
And once again, here on New England Lifestyles on radio.com in Boston, I'm Mike Mullaney, one of the great health. I mean, look, we've been talking about health all year on this show. You know, normally we're trying to talk about, you know, public affairs, things to go out and do and everything like that. But obviously, we've been facing a worldwide pandemic. But that does not change the fact that there are other things that we should be worrying about and trying to avoid. And one of those things is stroke. This past Thursday, the 29th, was World Stroke Awareness Day. And we wanted to talk about it because stroke is a major health issue. And joining us on the phone from the esteemed Mass General Hospital, my personal hospital, is Dr. Bay Leslie Maswi, who's the Director of Endovascular Stroke Services. Sir, welcome to radio.com in Boston.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Stroke is probably the thing I fear the most. I don't know why, but it's one of those things that it takes a huge toll on folks, and it's one of the leading causes of death in the country. Talk a little bit about how much of an issue stroke is and how much it impacts us.
Well, you're absolutely right to fear it. Stroke has a terrible, terrible toll on our population in the Commonwealth and in the country at large. So in our state, the number one reason why an adult in Massachusetts is disabled is because they've had a stroke. And the number five reason why they die is because of stroke. And those are just the personal costs. If you think about the implications in terms of lost productivity and care at the level of our society, you're looking at $2.5 billion in 2020 that we spent in Massachusetts in dealing with stroke. That's more than double what it was just a decade ago. So absolutely serious disease.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, stroke is something which, you know, you can't avoid, you know, getting these things. Sometimes things happen, you know what I mean? There are a variety of things that trigger a stroke. Why don't we talk about those a little bit? Because obviously we want to make sure people are healthy. We're going to talk about things you can do to try to keep yourself as healthy as possible. But what are some of the things that can trigger stroke in adults or children?
Yeah, so you know, a quote I've always loved from Ben Franklin, who is one of Boston's greatest sons, was the idea that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I really think that applies in the world of stroke. There's certain things that we know increase your risk. Remember, stroke is a disease of blood vessels. So any diseases that affect your blood vessels will increase your risk. So that's high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. If you're a smoker, please stop smoking. Having a sedentary lifestyle, those are all risk factors. And then if you add to those factors, which we can all control, family history or being a male, your risk is even higher.
Oh,
and so if we can focus on those, we don't do a great job about focusing on the preventable causes. But that's seeing your primary care doctor, taking your medicines as prescribed, and getting regular checkups. Those things will go a long, long way in preventing you having a stroke.
And if people do, in fact, when we talk about the effect of a stroke, you know, you mentioned it's the leading cause of disability in adults. You know, when it comes down to it, what are some of the effects you can have? Because we've seen, you know, the huge effect of strokes, you know, where someone will become paralyzed on one side of the body. What are some of the other impacts that having a stroke can have on an individual's lifestyle and living?
Well, what a stroke does is it takes away your function, and it takes that away typically suddenly. And so you lose the ability to do the things you normally would do to varying degrees. And for people that have a mild stroke, it might be, for example, you can't type the way you used to, or you can't see the way you used to. But there's a whole spectrum. For the more severe patients, the patients that have more severe damage, stroke can end their lives or leave them permanently bedbound in nursing homes in the long term.
I'm telling you, that is it's so often you see, you know, the impact of it. It's overwhelming. And, you know, we're going to talk about things you can do to live healthy lifestyles and stuff like that, but no one's immune to it. I remember a few years ago, one of the high-profile athletes to have a stroke was Teddy Bruschi, a professional athlete, champion for the New England Patriots. Turns out he had a defect in his heart, and it triggered a mild stroke. From your perspective, I mean, people have said, you know, that there are degrees of strokes, which there are, but anyone, it can happen. We've seen it happen to Norman Levier, the
right.
Member of the Bruins. It's a scary thing.
No, that's absolutely right. And the degrees of stroke can happen to anyone, too. Teddy Bruschi has become an incredible champion for the cause of stroke since he had his. And he was very fortunate that it was a mild stroke. But that could have been a career-ending event for him, a life-ending event for him. He was lucky it wasn't. So we all have to remain vigilant. We all have to have a concern for it. And we all have to respond appropriately in the event that we develop the symptoms.
When it comes down to it, one of the things that's important is diagnosing a person dealing with a stroke right away. I actually had an incident with a friend of mine who was dealing with some post, you know, surgery stuff that we were worried that he may have been having a stroke, which he was not. But the question to me is, what is it that you can spot that? Mm-hmm. What are some of the identifying signs that someone is potentially dealing with stroke? Because I would imagine that if you even suspect it slightly, you should immediately call 911.
No, Mike, you're absolutely right. The thing to remember is an acronym that is publicized by the American Heart Association, and that acronym is FAST: face, arm, speech, and then the T is time. So facial drooping, any abnormalities of speech, the difficulty speaking or understanding or garbled speech, and then any weakness of an arm should make you think, I could be having a stroke, let's dial 911. The T, the time piece, can't be emphasized enough. The main reason that patients don't get treatment, and there is now highly effective treatment, the main reason patients don't get treatment is that they delay getting to the hospital. And when they get to the hospital, they're beyond the point of salvage.
One of the things my wife always gives me a hard time about is she thinks I'm a hypochondriac. She thinks I always want to go to the hospital over every little thing. But the reality is I want to do everything I can to, if there's a situation, nip it in the bud as fast as possible. I know there's something that
exactly.
They actually give folks. Is there a treatment that paramedics can give you? Because I know that there's some discussion now with what happens with ambulance drivers and whether folks end up getting to a level one trauma center. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So the role of paramedics in stroke is extremely important. In the future, we might see paramedics delivering therapeutics in the field, something to either freeze the brain or support the brain better while they drive into a hospital for further help. But right now, what paramedics can do in the field is make the diagnosis of stroke and define how bad a stroke it is. And actually, that's a very important component in what we're trying to do at the level of the state in this World Stroke Day period, which is to change the legislation in our state so that if a paramedic in the field diagnoses a severe stroke, that paramedic can take the patient to a hospital that deals with severe stroke. Not all stroke can be treated at all hospitals. And if you think about the models for trauma or the models for heart attacks, the more severe patients are taken directly to a trauma center or a center that does cardiac cath. We want something similar to be in place for stroke, and we're working through the legislation with that as we speak.
I've heard that someone who wanted to go to an emergency room at Mass General was told by an ambulance driver that they could not bring them there because they had to bring them to the nearest hospital. Is that something that you've heard before?
No, absolutely. It's actually a common situation. I could use my own situation as an example. If I was at home and a visitor had a stroke, I could tell in the room, I could tell you this is too severe a stroke for my local hospital. But the ambulance is mandated by our current legislation to take the patient to that local hospital. What happens at the local hospital is they get evaluated and then referred on or transferred on to a what's called a comprehensive stroke center where the treatment for that severe stroke is performed. Now, the issue with that is that you lose so much time.
Right.
And stroke is a disease where literally every single second matters. As a rule of thumb, for every minute that you can save, you spare the patient a week of disability.
Wow.
And so, you know, stopping at that smaller hospital before going on to the bigger one can really impact a patient's chance of a recovery and a good outcome.
It just seems like that smaller hospital would be the middleman. We're not trying to diss community hospitals. They play a vital role, but in certain situations, you know, that's why they medevac people into Mass General and the downtown hospitals often, because they're the, you know, level one trauma centers, and that's what so many folks need. And as you said, that's such a key part of it. I've heard, by the way, that someone says if you think someone's dealing with a stroke, have them stick out their tongue. Is that a wives' tale or is that true?
Well, it can be true in the sense that sometimes the tongue will deviate, so they'll stick it out and it won't come straight out. It'll go either left or right. But more sensitive than having them stick out the tongue is having them say something. If your tongue is weak, then you won't be able to speak clearly. And so you'll hear garbled speech or what we call dysarthria in medicine. And that should be a clue that something's going on neurologically.
It's interesting. In the age of video and everything being taped, you can see, I mean, if you do a YouTube search for person suffers stroke during speech, it's shocking and it's terrifying to see how confused they get because you see these things happen. And again, it's so important. And again, if you just tune into radio.com here in Boston, I'm Mike Mullaney. This is New England Lifestyles, and we are talking to Dr. Bay Leslie Mazui, who is the director of endovascular stroke services at Mass General in Boston. We're discussing the fact that this past Thursday, the 29th was, the 29th was World Stroke Day, but everyone needs to know that strokes are so vital to try to avoid, and we have to do everything we can to keep ourselves healthy. The best thing, obviously, I would imagine, and you can give me the advice you give folks, but I would imagine the key is keeping a strong cardiovascular system. So I would think regular cardiovascular exercise is a key part of this.
It is. It's one of the various things that you can do. And I often tell patients in clinic that you have to think about your blood vessels as one system. So if you have a stroke, you have a problem with your brain. If you have a heart attack, you have a problem with your heart. If you have renal failure or peripheral vascular disease, those are all manifestations of the same process, which is blood vessel disease that's showing up in different organs. And so anything you do that's good for one area will be good for all areas. So what you do to make yourself healthy from a stroke standpoint will also make you healthy from a cardiac standpoint and a kidney standpoint and an eye standpoint and all the other aspects of your body that are subject to vascular disease.
And the Get Ahead Stroke campaign is working to ensure that patients with severe strokes are taken to Level 1 Stroke Center. We talked about that. It is really important to make sure that, you talk to your doctor and understand. You know, everyone should have a plan. I always tell people that you shouldn't wonder whether or not you have a fire extinguisher when the fire starts. That's something you should plan for. You know, people should really, have a plan for everything. And obviously no one wants to think about a stroke, but people should have conversations with their family about signs, you know what I mean? That, as you said, these things, the drooping arms, if someone has slurred speech, we should all be, relatively aware of these things because we are our own best first response system.
I agree. That's exactly the way to think about it. Everyone around you is your first responder. Sometimes if you have a stroke, you aren't able to do something like call 911. And so if you have anything on the list of diseases that I mentioned earlier, high blood pressure, hyperlipidemia, you have atrial fibrillation, you're a smoker, then be aware that you're at higher risk. But if you live with someone that has those diseases, you should be aware that they're at higher risk and know how to respond. Now, the easy thing about stroke is that your response is not complicated. It's just dial 911.
Yeah.
Nothing could be simpler. Yeah. And as you said, Mike, you want to rather have a false alarm than a late alarm.
Right.
Be a hypochondriac when it comes to stroke.
Yeah, better safe than sorry. I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's a reason that we have great medical facilities here in New England. The fact that, you can get great treatment and prevention is the best form. I mean, we've said it again and again. Eating healthy and exercise, that is medicine. Everyone seems to assume that, taking a pill is medicine, but the best medicine is eating well and exercising and keeping yourself in the best possible position to have a healthy body, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. But if you do need a pill, if you do have high cholesterol, for example, and your doctor's prescribed a pill or you have diabetes and you're supposed to be taking insulin or some other medication, then taking those medicines is the way you ensure you stay healthy.
It is amazing how effective those treatments are. A friend of mine had high blood pressure and it brought it right down. It's stunning how effective high blood pressure medication is now.
Yeah, and the mistake we often see people make is they say, well, look, my blood pressure's improved. I don't need the medicine anymore. But your blood pressure's improved because of the medicine. You need to maintain it at that lower level. You need to be checking it at home.
Well, it's great to talk to you, sir. Again, Dr. Bay Leslie Mazui, the Director of Endovascular Stroke Services at Mass General. Keep fit and make sure you know the signs of stroke. Sir, I appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us here at Radio.com in Boston on New England Lifestyles.
Mike, we really appreciate you highlighting this issue. It couldn't be emphasized enough. So thank you.
Thanks.